Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia on the 21st of November 2015. I'm Harold Fenton. Great pleasure to be with you today. And in today's show, I've got quite a lot of info to pack in, and I've got a number of video segments I want to play. I don't know if I'm going to get through everything that I intend to today, but I'm going to try. I want to initially focus on my reflections and some important reports regarding the situation with the international problems regarding terrorism, ISIS, and the analysis of that, which is so important and is so lacking in the mainstream news, which gets to the root of what is really going on and perhaps to a potential way through, a potential future that we might be able to forge that doesn't have these constant fears and threats looming over our heads. And I want to start with an article by John Pilger, which was posted on Counterpunch just a few days ago. This article by John Pilger is very, very important, and it actually echoes some things that I've been saying a number of times on this show. John Pilger, of course, a filmmaker, a legendary filmmaker with many, many decades and many, many films behind him. One of his landmark films that he made was The Killing Fields, which was his expose of what happened in Cambodia during the Khmer Rouge regime there that lasted from 1974 to 1979, in which over a million people were exterminated by a regime that was fanatical, that was driven by irrational application of belief systems to the point at which the individuality and the rights of individuals were completely subordinated to the collective mythos, to the belief system of a kind of a totalitarian cult. And even though this was actually an atheistic belief system, technically, in its literal application, it was very much a religious cult. And that is why it is very interesting and important to understand the parallels between the Khmer Rouge and what happened in Cambodia and ISIS and what is now happening in Syria and Iraq, because they both had their roots in a Western, particularly American bombardment, destruction on a colossal scale of people's lives. And this uprooting and destruction of the basic principles and frameworks of people's lives appears to be the driving factor in what creates the kind of disordered psychopathic mentality that we see in these maniacal adherents of ISIS. I've got some other thoughts on that, which I'll read to you after, but I want to just read to you from the article by John Pilger initially, which is very, very important. So here we go. From November 17, 2015. From Pol Pot to ISIS, The Blood Never Dried, by John Pilger. In transmitting Richard Nixon's orders for a massive bombing of Cambodia in 1969, Henry Kissinger said, "Anything that flies on anything that moves." As Barack Obama wages his seventh war against the Muslim world since he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, and François Hollande promises a merciless attack on the rubble of Syria, the orchestrated hysteria and lies make one almost nostalgic for Kissinger's murderous honesty. As a witness to the human consequences of aerial savagery, including the beheading of victims, their parts festooning trees and fields, I am not surprised by the disregard of memory and history yet again. A telling example is the rise to power of Pol Pot and his Khmer Rouge, who had much in common with today's Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. They too were ruthless medievalists who began as a small sect. They too were the product of an American-made apocalypse, this time in Asia. According to Pol Pot, his movement had consisted of fewer than 5,000 poorly armed guerrillas, uncertain about their strategy, tactics, loyalty, and leaders. Once Nixon's and Kissinger's B-52 bombers had gone to work as part of Operation Menu, the West's ultimate demon could not believe his luck. The Americans dropped the equivalent of 5 Hiroshimas on rural Cambodia during 69 to 73. They leveled village after village, returning to bomb the rubble and corpses. The craters left giant necklaces of carnage, still visible from the air. The terror was unimaginable. A former Khmer Rouge official described how the survivors froze up and they would wander around, mute, for 3 or 4 days. Terrified and half crazy, the people were ready to believe what they were told. That was what made it so easy for the Khmer Rouge to win people over. A Finnish government commission of inquiry estimated that 600,000 Cambodians died in the ensuing civil war and described the bombing as the first stage in a decade of genocide. What Nixon and Kissinger began, Pol Pot, their beneficiary, completed. Under their bombs, the Khmer Rouge grew to a formidable army of 200,000. ISIS has a similar past and present. By most scholarly measures, Bush and Blair's invasion of Iraq in 2003 led to the deaths of at least 700,000 people in a country that had no history of jihadism. The Kurds had done territorial and political deals. Sunni and Shia had class and sectarian differences, but they were at peace. Intermarriage was common. 3 years before the invasion, I drove the length of Iraq without fear. On the way, I met people proud, above all, to be Iraqis, the heirs of a civilization that seemed, for them, a presence. Bush and Blair blew all this to bits. Iraq is now a nest of jihadism. Al-Qaeda, like Pol Pot's jihadists, seized the opportunity provided by the onslaught of shock and awe and the civil war that followed. Rebel Syria offered even greater rewards, with CIA and Gulf State rat lines of weapons, logistics and money running through Turkey. The arrival of foreign recruits was inevitable. A former British ambassador, Oliver Miles, wrote, "The Cameron government seems to be following the example of Tony Blair, who ignored consistent advice from the Foreign Office, MI5 and MI6 that our Middle East policy, and in particular our Middle East wars, had been a principal driver in the recruitment of Muslims in Britain for terrorism." ISIS is the progeny of those in Washington, London and Paris who, in conspiring to destroy Iraq, Syria and Libya, committed an epic crime against humanity. Like Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge, ISIS are the mutations of a Western state terror dispensed by venal imperial elite, undeterred by the consequences of actions taken at great remove in distance and culture. Their culpability is unmentionable in our societies, making accomplices of those who suppress this critical truth. Now, I might just leave it there. The article goes on. It's quite long, and I will leave notes to it on the site. I want to read to you my own thoughts on this, just a brief snippet that I put up on Facebook today. John Pilger is a highly informed researcher on this topic who made a film about the Cambodian genocide. He knows what he is talking about. This analysis is extremely important because it demonstrates that ISIS is not a product of Islam. It is a product of Western imperialism and mass murder, which dehumanizes and radicalizes populations, and which can produce in any society the kind of disordered psychopathic traits that we see in both ISIS and the Khmer Rouge. I'm not saying Islam does not have in its history and teachings elements which can justify human rights abuses. Of course, that's true. But the same can be said of every religion, ideology, and belief system. To give a ridiculous example, I have seen vegans calling for the extermination of meat eaters on Facebook. The anti-Islam agenda has been fed to you to foment chaos and civil strife, which is being used as a justification right now to strip all of us of our rights. Don't fall for it. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the main message I want to get across. Because so many people have fallen for the anti-Islam rhetoric, and there are voices within Australia that are quite prominent and loud. I don't even want to mention them because I don't want to give them any oxygen. But they, and there are groups like the Reclaim Australia movement, etc., which are predominantly composed of people who are genuine and but confused. They're not necessarily bad people, but they are swept up in a xenophobic, hate-filled mentality, which of course is driven by these atrocities, which are definitely occurring. They're real, and they are absolutely hideous. And it's far more than just the attacks on the few terrorist attacks that have happened in the West. What they're doing in Syria and Iraq is evil beyond description, but it is not new. It is not some, and it is not unique to Islam. That's why the understanding, the connection here between the Khmer Rouge and ISIS, Khmer Rouge, an atheistic political system loosely based on Marxism and Maoist thought, ISIS allegedly based on radical Islam and Sharia law. But where do they come together? They come together in a brutal, dehumanizing, collectivist mentality. That's where they come together. And why? Why is that the case? Because when people have been dehumanized already by the destruction of their societies, by brutal bombing campaigns, by seeing their families killed in front of them so many times, seeing people ripped apart, as John Pilger said, you know, heads blown off, bodies festooned in trees. Guess what? This has an effect on the psychology and the morality of individuals. This warps people. This turns people into something that we can't quite relate to because we haven't had that type of experience. This destroys the moral compass of individuals and makes them capable of doing things that ordinary people who have had typical lives where we've had the basic needs met and haven't been dehumanized and brutalized and abused to such an extent that we can't fully grasp. I want to continue on this thought when we come back from break. You are with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. Now, as I was saying before the break, the ISIS phenomenon is a created phenomenon. It is a Frankenstein monster. It is created and indeed was deliberately created to terrorize. And it is serving an agenda in the Middle East, but it is also now coming to the West. I don't know whether it is all going according to plan or not. I doubt everything is going exactly according to plan because you can't really control a Frankenstein monster once it gets loose. But, of course, they would have known that. The people who are doing this are bringing chaos into the world, right? They're bringing chaos into the world because it empowers them, because the response to chaos is power, is control. And of course, they have so much military might and so much force that they believe they can always crush whatever forces are railed against them. And even now, ISIS coming to the West is still within the province of the agenda of their power plan. And of course, we've been talking about this for years, about how terrorism has been used to bring in a totalitarian form of society in the West. And in many cases, it has been purely false flag, and we have a lot of information to suggest that the 9/11 attacks were actually inside jobs. We know that. But what we have now is we have an army of real monsters, right? So even though there is a false flag element still at work, even though there is perhaps manipulation, we have real individuals who are capable of committing atrocities, and many now, many more than they used to be because of the decades of destruction of the countries from which these people come. And once it reaches that point, they have to be crushed with massive force. There is no other way to deal with it. It's a bit like Nazi Germany. Once that monster had taken off and run rampant across Europe, it had to be crushed with bombs and tanks. And it is a terrible thing that has to occur. It is terribly destructive. Now, I'd like to actually play to you another video clip. And this clip here is from a reporter who is on RT, and I believe his name is Gerard O'Connor. And what he says is incredibly accurate and incredibly precise, and I just want to play some of it because it is the sort of thing that we are so sorely missing in the mainstream media. So this is from a recent interview on RT regarding the Paris terror attacks. Here we go.
Well, let's now talk to political journalist and author Gerard O'Coleman, who joins us from Paris this evening. Thanks very much for joining us again on RT International. You're in the French capital. What's the mood and atmosphere in the city right now?
We're being told that there's a state of war and a state of emergency. We've had this before. We had this in January, and for several weeks we had non-stop sirens and non-stop chatter on the radio about the threat from radical Islam and terrorist groups and so on. And so we're having a kind of a replay of that, but it has been, I think, accentuated, and we're going to have an intensification of the media campaign, which is essentially a propaganda campaign to make people in France fear Muslims. We need to be clear about the origin of the war on terror. The war on terror is, I quote, orchestrated from abroad. These are the words François Hollande used to describe this terrorist attack. Well, the attacks that have been continuing to destroy Syria, to massacre its population, have also been orchestrated from abroad. They were orchestrated by NATO, and they've been carrying these attacks out against the civilian population of Syria for 4 years now. And this is a terrorist campaign that is also orchestrated from abroad. And people in Europe need to understand that there is a war that is becoming global, that is being waged against civilian populations in particular. It is a form of neo-imperialism and neo-colonialism, which aims to divide and conquer European and Middle Eastern and African and the world's population, for that matter, and to make them submit to a global order that does not serve the interests of most of the people on this planet, but that does serve the interests of a very few ruling elite, very small, tiny, and particularly tyrannical ruling elite. There is no war on terror. There is a war that is being waged using proxy groups, terrorist proxy groups, and they are being used against nation states who are resisting U.S. and Israeli hegemony, and they are also being used as a means of disciplining the workforces in Europe in a period of mass unemployment and austerity you now have terrorist attacks being committed by terrorists funded, armed and trained by Western intelligence agencies. There is no such thing as ISIS. ISIS is a creation of the United States. We know that from official sources of the U.S. military themselves. Declassified documents from the Defense Intelligence Agency have confirmed that. And the French are now, the French government is now attempting to drum up support for more military intervention in Syria. And what they want to do is they want to get in on the game. The game is almost lost. The Russians have routed much of the Islamic State. You now have Islamic State militants coming into Europe disguised as refugees. That will destabilize Central Europe. And the French government wants to get in on the game in Syria and prop up those so-called moderate rebels. There are no moderate rebels, of course, in Syria. There are Al-Qaeda and ISIS militants, terrorists who have been beheading people, eviscerating people, absolutely creating chaos and genocide right across the region. And this does not serve the Syrian people or anyone other than the Western corporate elites and their geopolitical interests.
What do you expect France to do now in the light not only of Friday's terrorism, but 10 months on from Charlie Hebdo? It's not going to ease up on what it's doing, is it?
No. Much depends on how the French public will react. We are being bombarded now with a media propaganda campaign. There's just nonstop talk where we're told not to go out in the street. We're supposed to be fearful and keep quiet and so on. I think there is going to be a campaign against dissidents in France. They're very worried about the new media that has emerged in recent years, and they are very worried about the alternative media. So I think there you will see, we saw this actually after the attacks in January, you will see a conflation of terrorism and dissidents. So one of the tools which the mass media uses to discredit any kind of rational questioning of the established order, and particularly the war on terrorism, is to deride those who would question the war on terrorism as conspiracy theorists. And I think you're going to see a crackdown on so-called conspiracy theorists and websites that actually publish rational and honest analysis of what is happening. So
I'll just leave it there. It's an interview that goes for about 10 minutes. It's very, very interesting, very important. And his analysis there is spot on. And of course, indeed, these attacks will be used to crack down on alternative media, because alternative media, of course, is the biggest threat internally to the agenda behind the New World Order power grab that is currently now in its end game. You know, they're basically trying to just consolidate and just get control now. They know they've got a limited window in which to act with the rising power of Russia, with the rising awareness in the people. We really are at a critical juncture here, an end game for the degenerate powers that be, but I think it's going to end badly for them. I just want to briefly turn to another aspect of that, which is, I mean, it's quite ludicrous. It's almost a joke, but they're actually blaming Edward Snowden for the terror attacks. And I've got a clip here from the CIA director. Oh, well, I'll play when we come back from the break. The director of the CIA conflating Edward Snowden with the Paris terror attacks. We'll be right back with Truth News Radio Australia. Stay with us. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And as we were saying there before the break, not only are these terrorist attacks in Paris to be used to silence dissent, they're also to be used as a justification for throwing the book at whistleblowers and for showing no leniency whatsoever to people like Edward Snowden. And I've got an article here from news.com.au. CIA blames National Security Agency whistleblower Edward Snowden for Paris attacks. It almost sounds like something you'd read on The Onion, doesn't it? It sounds like satire. America's most senior intelligence officers have blamed the Paris attacks on National Security Agency renegade Edward Snowden. Both the current CIA director, John Brennan, and his predecessor, James Woolsey, claimed in separate interviews that leaks by the former contractor taught Islamist terrorists how to use encryption and avoid standard means of electronic communication to evade detection. This is despite the fact that terrorists are known to have used anti-surveillance techniques since before 9/11, and an independent report last year which found no correlation between updates to jihadist encryption software and Snowden's leaks. This is interesting in that this article actually comes from the Murdoch Empire, and we've got a few more things to say about the Murdoch Empire before the end of this show. But normally they are very, very pro-America and pro-American agendas. This article actually has a surprising amount of insight into the stupidity of the current statements being made by Mr. Brennan. Here's a quote. In the past several years, because of a number of unauthorized disclosures and a lot of hand-wringing over the government's role in the effort to try to uncover these terrorists, there have been some policy and legal and other actions that have been taken that make our ability collectively, internationally, to find these terrorists much more challenging. Yeah. Well, you know, basically, you've been found to have broken the law. You've been found to actually have done things that are actually illegal, that have been exposed by courageous whistleblowers. And it is just so pathetic. All I can think of, the only word I can think of listening to Mr. Brennan, I'll just play a brief clip here from the that's posted on the article of the CIA director Brennan speaking. Here we go. I call this pathetic.
I think any unauthorized disclosures that are made by individuals who have dishonored the oath of office that they raised their hand and attested to undermines this country's security. And so individuals who have done that over time...
Notice how he says any unauthorized disclosures... I mean, what if the CIA was like murdering babies and eating them in the basement? That would be an unauthorized disclosure too, wouldn't it? I mean, it's actually comical. This man is comical. Let's just continue playing the audio here.
And heroizing such individuals I find to be unfathomable as far as what it is that...
It's unfathomable, not unfathomable. All right, you bumbling, stupid fool. And it's completely fathomable that some people have morals. This is what could say, this is what could rescue the West, is people like Snowden. And at the moment, there's just too few. Sorry, continuing with the audio.
This country needs to be able to do, again, in order to keep itself safe. And a lot of people who are speaking out there about what some individuals have done and applauding it have no understanding, are totally ignorant of what it is that such people have wrought. And so what we need to be able to do in the future is to make sure that, again, this balance between individual rights and liberties and the government's sacred obligation to keep its people safe and secure needs to be struck. But it needs to evolve.
Yes, it's this delicate balance. When, you know, whenever they use this phrase delicate balance, it basically means we're going to screw you over. You know, it basically means you're going to be stripped of your rights. There's, you know, There is a balance, but the balance is in law. The balance is in common law that goes back thousands of years to the Magna Carta. There are some freedoms we give away in order to live in a civil society. Like, we agreed to stop at red lights. You know, wouldn't it be great if we could just drive through a red light? But actually, we stop. We are limiting freedoms in those ways, right? But when these people talk about the balance between freedom and keeping you safe, they're really just talking about stripping everything back, right, to keep you safer. But in doing so, they are just referring to the implementation of a plan, which itself would be a crime. Now, I have another clip to play here, which I discovered just today from September, where Edward Snowden is talking about some very, very important issues. And I'll play a little bit of that before we go to break. And then I've got some other very important material to cover in the last segment today. Just a little bit here from Edward Snowden with Daniel Ellsberg speaking on a show called Upfront from September 2015. Here we go.
Edward Snowden, thanks for joining me on Upfront. We're also joined from San Francisco by Daniel Ellsberg. Edward Snowden, let me start with you. What quality, what characteristic do you think defines a whistleblower? What makes someone such as yourself or Daniel go public with state secrets, take such massive risks with your reputation, with your career, with your safety?
It's a very difficult and kind of complex question. Because I typically don't classify people. I don't like the whistleblower terminology, the hero terminology, or traitor terminology. Anything where we're otherizing people, it creates distance between them. But if we want to think about the general behaviors that people share, the general choices that they make, I think it ultimately comes down to, you see a structure of laws where the legality of the times are becoming more and more divorced from the morality of our daily lives, the daily decision-making, the sort of values we hold. And when we have that, you ultimately have to make a choice about what do you have a greater commitment to, the law or to justice? And that's what being a whistleblower is about to me.
Daniel, do you share that view? What was going through your mind back in 1971 when you took that decision to go up against the U.S. government over Vietnam?
Well, I feel a great identity with Edward Snowden. I think a whistleblower tends to be an insider who has been aware for some time, often, and been silent about abuses or injustices, crimes, lies, like many of his colleagues have been aware. And there comes a time when he or she realizes it's wrong to continue to be silent, to hold these secrets away from the outsiders who are being harmed by the secrecy of that information.
Edward,
I'm going to have to leave it there. I'll put that up. This is a long interview. It's got a lot of detail in it. But I just put it to you, you know, who makes more sense to you, Edward Snowden or the director of the CIA? You know, I really pity people. I pity people in America who because of their family allegiances, their country allegiances, their loyalties, the bubble that they live in, that they're forced to turn to that bumbling fool, the CIA director, to give them some guidance about what is correct and what is moral. Because there are a lot of people in America that do that, that simply don't have the benefit of the sort of information that's coming from people like Snowden. It is really very sad, because these people, these men in suits who run our countries, and it applies to Australia equally well, of course, they are out of touch, and they are leading their populations to catastrophe, to disaster. Edward Snowden is a real hero, and it is because of heroic acts like what he did, that there is actually hope for the future of the West. There is very little hope otherwise. There is very little hope for my country, Australia, being as we are, a complete puppet of empire, having been controlled by the British Empire for hundreds of years and now controlled by the US Empire. We are going to be sucked in to whatever maelstrom they create, and it could turn out very, very badly for us. When we come back for break, I've got some important reports from the vaccine protest outside News Limited office in Sydney last Saturday. Stay with us.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point...
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I want to play to you now some video clips that were filmed at the No Jab, No Pay, No Way protest outside News Corp offices in Holt Street, Sydney, yesterday on the 20th of November. Of course, I had Damien Poulsen on last week, and he gave an excellent interview. And I'm going to play to you a clip from his speech at the protest. Then I'm going to play to you another clip from Michael O'Neill of the Involuntary Medication Objectors Party. So here we go. Damien Poulsen at the No Jab, No Pay, No Way protest.
Here. We're standing. And where are we? And why are we here? We are here today in front of News Limited in Surry Hills, Sydney, because we're going to raise our concerns. There isn't an equal and fair discussion around our concerns. It's always very one-sided. And we're here today out the front of Mr. Rupert Murdoch's empire, one of his offices in Sydney, to share with you many speakers that are here today to talk about the fact that we are blacklisted. Baby killers and terrorists. I know many of you people here today, and I know you're not baby killers, and I know you're not terrorists.
Right.
Just a bit of clarification there. Claire Harvey of the Daily Telegraph posted an article in which she directly said the headline was that vaccine objectors were baby killers and terrorists. I'm not joking.
Especially in this climate, in this day and age. How can that report even be put out of a place like this? We are passionate, we are loving, and we are well-informed parents. Not be stifled, and we will use our freedom of speech, and we have a very good relationship with the police, and we'll do everything legally. So I do ask, in that sense, please don't obstruct the doors, please don't abuse anyone coming out. Now, I could not imagine for one second that anyone here would do that, but I do have to say it. Now, in the late 1900s, state-based welfare systems were introduced. In 1909-1910, the new Commonwealth Parliament introduced a welfare system which superseded state-based welfare systems. A child endowment payment was made in 1941 to the second child, and in 1950 it was made to the first child. So this payment that the government of Australia is taking away from very well-informed and loving parents of Australia is unjust. I say, and I've said it in my open letter to Jane Hansen, and I put it out there yesterday. I spoke to Jane Hansen yesterday on the phone. Unfortunately, she hung up on me. I don't personally have any issues with Jane Hansen because I don't know her personally. So she can't personally have any issues with me because she doesn't know me personally. But she hung up with me. And I put a letter out there to her, and I expect a response. I'm happy to shout, Jane Hansen, I'm happy to shout you a lunch in McDonald's to the fanciest restaurant in Sydney. Claire Harvey, I'm happy to shout you a lunch. From McDonald's to the fanciest restaurant in Sydney. So we can sit down, we can have a chat and get to know each other. And you can see that I am not a baby killer or a terrorist. Because I have 5-year-old twins, and they're not vaccinated. But they're very healthy and happy children. I know many of you people...
Okay, that's Damien Poulsen there speaking at the event. Now, just looking at the video... there were a lot of police there for quite a small protest. There was I counted 10 police there, all blocking the entranceway to News Corp. Extraordinary police presence, really, for such a small protest. But still, that, you know, it's a significant protest, and I think everyone knows that this is significant. Unfortunately, the number of people who are aware of the issues with vaccines are still very small. And as Damien Poulsen here says, what the government is doing with these new laws, they fly in the face of a lifetime of government policies going back at least to 1950, but then there are other laws going back to the foundation of Australia in regard to endowments for children. So something has changed in the last year that a whole lifetime of basically a guaranteed endowments is to be now stripped away. Why? I mean, is there a sudden epidemic? Are children dying in incredible numbers now? What is going on? Well, no, they're not. The vaccination numbers are as high as they've ever been. Vaccination failure is more of a problem, and that's been admitted. So really what they're doing is they're just stripping away basic rights. I want to now play to you a speech from Michael O'Neill of the Involuntary Medication Objectors Party, a party that I did not even know about till today. I will play that for you, and that will probably take us to the end of the show today. Here we go.
Yes, we have the Involuntary Medication Objectors Party because that's what we do. We object that honest Australians would be forced to involuntary medicate their children regardless of what they do, regardless of how they raise the children and how they take care of their health. You know, we're sitting out in front of a media mogul's Australian headquarters, I suppose it is his headquarters, today, and... part of the democratic country we live in is freedom of the press. We acknowledge freedom of the press is vital for a vibrant democracy. But with freedom of the press comes responsibility. And the first bit of responsibility is to tell the truth. The second responsibility is to report the news in a factual way without bias to any particular bent. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has recently stated that the censorship that exists around the current vaccination debate is the censorship story of the millennium. There are people that are not being heard. There are tens of thousands of Australian families that are living day by day from 24 hours from the time they get up to the time they go to sleep with damaged children. Not mildly damaged children, but seriously damaged children. And they attributed the commencement of that trouble started at their vaccination. If it was one, we might dismiss it. If it was 10, we might dismiss it. If it was 100 in a nation of over 20 million, we might dismiss it. But it's tens of thousands of people. Ridiculous. They're quiet people. They're not radicals. There are many people that I know would have loved to have been here today that won't become here because they fear for their children and the consequences that may happen. This is a deplorable state. When the media is used and it's not factual, and it's has a biased slant, and it's used for the powers that be, it then becomes propaganda. Yes. And so what we have today is a massive propaganda campaign, and the victims of that propaganda are honest, hard-working, tax-paying, good-living, wonderful Australian families. And this is deplorable, and it has to stop. And the buck stops at this place here.
Right.
2 years ago, you could vaccinate or not vaccinate, and even though it engendered some lively debate in lounge rooms and over dinner parties and amongst women's groups, The whole game changed 2 years ago when this paper decided to embark on their no jab, no pay campaign. This campaign was seriously targeted. Imagine the height of them to call Australian families that are doing the best that they know how to their children murderers and terrorists. I mean, it's just appalling. I couldn't believe it. I watched and it grew and it grew. Now, the editorial staff of this paper have to bear responsibility for it.
That's
because
right.
Claire Harvey and Jane Hansen might write the damn stupid stories they're putting out, but the editorial committee are obviously approving it, and there's not a few days when they get an entire four pages to put this drivel out. President John F. Kennedy stated, he said, let us resolve to be masters and not victims of our history, controlling our destiny, not giving way to blind suspicion and emotions. These articles are not scientific. They are purely blind suspicion and emotion. They appeal to people's fears. And we like to trust the paper that what we're reading, it tells the truth. And that's why the majority of the people think that they say things like, the science is in, the argument's over. Unfortunately, the science is not in. The argument's not over.
Right.
And that 8% conservatively of Australians do not vaccinate their children. And who are these people? These are just the wonderful, good-living, hard-working Australian taxpayers. And for Jane Hansen to say in the Telegraph a couple of weeks ago that they have no right to the money, it's our money, and why should they be getting any of this money? Hello, I really knew that I was dealing, we were reading someone that really didn't get a grasp on how the tax system works. We all pay taxes. We all contribute it. And when the government makes a ruling on a tax matter that someone gets X benefit or Y benefit, then that's an entitlement. If you fit the criteria because of your wage structure, then you're entitled to it, whether that childcare or Part A or Part B. So here we have this nonsense that's been written that appeals pure to fear, not fact.
I'm afraid I have to leave it there. We are at the end of the hour. Some very important points being made there, and it demonstrates what Edward Bernays said about the media being effectively a secret government. But it's not really that secret, is it? I mean, News Corp can just basically change policy just by putting articles in the Daily Telegraph and then creating second-class citizens who are exempt, who are removed from society's benefits. Truth News Radio Australia signing out. We will be back next week. See you then.